Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Very interesting developments all around us. And one of the most interesting, well, it has to do with Deepak Chopra making comments at the Washington Post Newsweek's On Faith feature about Rick Warren. But beyond Rick Warren, really talking about evangelical Christians who make moral judgments. And he's talking about what he wants to lament as the rise of incivility in America. But he zeroes in on the issue of homosexuality and using Rick Warren as his kind of poster child for evangelicalism. He goes at it and speaks about evangelicals responding with hatred towards homosexuals. And he says it is because we believe in a God who hates homosexuality, and that thus that means we really are hating people who practice such a thing. He says it's a theological problem. Deepak Chopra says very explicitly in this article that what evangelicals really have is a theological problem that ends up being an incivility demonstration. We're going to be talking today about that particular argument, why it's not limited to Deepak Chopra, why it's gaining ground in postmodern America, and why this is where we're going to have to really figure out how to think in a way that is distinctively and genuinely Christian. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I posted a tweet just a little bit ago saying that I'm going on the air to talk about Deepak Chopra's words about Rick Warren, you know, and said, okay, that's got to make for great radio, right? Well, it does because of this. It's not just about Deepak Chopra, and it's not just about Rick Warren. It's about the increasingly popular argument that evangelicals hold to a theology that inevitably leads to incivility in a postmodern culture. We're going to take that issue on head on the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Meanwhile, with all kinds of issues going around, as we look at some issues in the news, ground zero for some very interesting developments over the last few days was the United Nations and, of course, all kinds of things going on with a very unique regular meeting of world leaders coming together. It was unique in that this was the first time these particular leaders are there. 8 months into the presidency of President Barack Obama, it was his first opportunity on that particular platform on the world stage. And now the G20 meets in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Very interesting cultural development there. President Obama, the Obama administration, chose where this G20 meeting would be in the United States. They chose Pittsburgh. Choosing Pittsburgh is something of a symbol of America in a period of transformation. The G20 are going to be meeting there. We talk about a host of issues, but right at the front of the agenda will be some of the issues related to global warming and climate change, getting ready for the Copenhagen meeting, which is just a few months away. And even with that Copenhagen meeting, which, by the way, is worthy of a lot of our conversation, in the background of that, you can see the jockeying, the positioning, the kinds of negotiating going on, not only in terms of what is said, but in all the drama of politics. And let's just remember that when you were in high school, you kind of knew who the power people were and who the cool people were and who was seen with whom and who wouldn't have been seen with that person for anything. It's almost funny to watch this at the level of international politics when you have the press taking apart who stands next to whom, who is seen talking to whom. A lot of conversation right now about the fact that President Obama has refused to have a one-on-one meeting known as a bilateral context meeting with the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Gordon Brown. And so the British press is just ablaze with this in terms of what that means for the so-called special relationship between the United States and Great Britain. I mention this because it's one of those reminders to us that even though there's something of an almost soap opera, circus-like context to this and flavor of it, the reality is that real decisions are made that will affect millions of people. And they're being made by very real human beings that are going to be meeting there in Pittsburgh over the next couple of days. And we need to be watching what's being discussed and where this goes in that conversation. All right, folks, some other interesting things. I'll tell you, few can eclipse this in terms of being interesting. This news story has been carried by the Associated Press, and it's been going around. Here is the headline, as covered in the Courier-Journal here in Louisville, Kentucky. Ohio woman got wrong embryo. Now, this story was very helpfully sent to me over the weekend by several of you, which I greatly appreciated. As this story began to make the rounds, it's one of those things that catches your attention because it reaches us right at the level of the heart, and you know immediately you've got a huge moral dilemma. Now, why is there a moral dilemma? Well, if you've been listening to me for any length of time, if you've been reading what I have been writing on reproductive technologies, one of the things we're dealing with is the reality that that when you abstract reproduction from the context of a husband and wife and sexual intercourse, you immediately bring in the opportunity for all kinds of things to happen that otherwise could not happen. And, of course, the biggest problem when it comes to IVF treatments is indeed the reality that we're stockpiling hundreds of thousands, probably now over a million, quote, excess human embryos. But the other side of that is that you have the opportunity for all kinds of things just to go awry. And by the way, you have the opportunity for embryo sorting when you have now people in more or less a consumerist mode saying, I'll take this baby, I'll take this child, I won't take that child. And at the embryo level, making the decisions who shall live and who shall die. In this case, there is another issue, and this one is excruciating, no doubt about it. Carolyn Savage, according to the Associated Press, didn't know what to think, what to say, where to look as the ultrasound wand glided over her. It was supposed to be her baby inside, not someone else's, yet there she was in the doctor's office with the baby's biological mother brought together by an error at a fertility clinic. A doctor, they said, had given Savage the wrong embryo, and now she was carrying the other woman's child. Okay? So you have an IVF clinic, and it implants the wrong embryo in the woman, transfers the wrong embryo into her womb. Now, the Associated Press reports embryo mix-ups at fertility clinics are extremely rare. Well, that's kind of like, you know, certain forms of accidents or certain viruses. They may be rare, but when they happen, they are extremely significant. And that is certainly the case here. It may be rare, but in this case, it is all too real. This was someone else's child, Carolyn Savage said to the Associated Press. We didn't know who it was. We didn't know if they didn't have children or if this was their last chance for a child. We knew if our child was out there, we'd go to the ends of the earth to get our child back. So Savage, age 40, is due to give birth to a boy within the next 2 weeks via a cesarean section. When it happens, biological parents Paul and Shannon Morrell of Michigan will be standing nearby waiting to meet their son. How do you thank somebody for what they've done? Sharon Morrell said. I could say thank you a million different ways. There's a relatively happy ending to this, a very happy ending for this couple who will now have their baby boy. But it's another reminder to us that when you abstract reproduction from human sex, because that's what the technologies have allowed. The technology of contraception allowed us to have sex without babies. Now we have the possibility of babies without sex through all these reproductive technologies. And getting the wrong embryo in the womb is just one of the risks we now take. Let me tell you why this particular story is much happier than it otherwise could be. When the Savages were told that they had the wrong embryo in the womb, it came in the form of a call from a doctor. The doctor informed the Savages that the wife was pregnant with someone else's child. The doctor told them they could abort, but thankfully, the couple didn't consider that a viable option. Very, very, and let's be thankful for a couple here that did not consider that a viable option. And so they went through the process of finding out whose embryo this was, and thus, as they understand it, whose baby this is. And they're going to give the baby to the biological parents. Fascinating story. You know good and well that given the fact that, as we talked about on this program, you have the abortion now of 92% of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome. We know we have sex selection abortions going on in this country. We know we have genetic screening going on in this country. I have to tell you, this is a very, very lucky embryo. It is a very, very blessed baby now that as this embryo was transferred to what is now called the wrong womb, it was transferred to the womb of a woman who believes in the dignity and sanctity of every human life and would not consider aborting a baby in her womb that, according to the press and the doctors and the scientists, is not her own. A fascinating development, a reminder to us that these issues always bring moral entanglements that go far beyond what is imagined. Every new technology brings a host of moral challenges. It's inevitable because these challenges come when the technology is actually applied and you recognize that, that we are pioneering entire new areas. And this is only, as we might say, the tip of the iceberg. When it comes to the biomedical revolution, when it comes to the actual deciphering of the human genome, when it comes to germline therapies, when it comes to the stem cell therapies that are promised out there and the experimentation that is going on to the cost of destroying human embryos, when, for instance, you have the Human Embryology and Fertilization Authority in Great Britain going ahead and deciding that making chimeras, human-animal hybrids, is allowable in the laboratory, folks, we're crossing barrier after barrier. And if no one else, Christians had better be thinking this through. We'll be back on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. On Faith is a feature of the Washington Post and Newsweek magazine. I am a member of the panel. I periodically join the discussions there. I'm joining this one just a little bit late because this is one of those that kind of exploded at the end of the week. And it had to do with an exchange involving Deepak Chopra. Now, Deepak Chopra, for those of you who know him, is the author, well, this is what it says on the back of one of his books, the author of more than 50 books translated in over 35 languages. He's a guru of sorts. And he is a fixture, a kind of a new age fixture on many of the talk programs. I've been posed against him on several of the programs like Larry King Live, where he and I have had some very interesting exchanges over the years. He's out right now with an argument, and it was in answer to the On Faith question. John Meacham and Sally Quinn asked the questions for the On Faith program. This is what they raised. They raised, for instance, the lack of clarity and charity, they're saying, out there in the larger world, and incivility. A basic rudeness that they're asking about, and what Kathleen Parker, the columnist, calls a political era of uninhibited belligerence. They're asking, is this finding expression in sermons, town hall meetings, radio talk shows, even on the floor of Congress? They ask the question, why are people so angry and belligerent and so willing to express their anger publicly? Why has our civil discourse become uncivil? What does this public anger say about our private faith? What should we do about it? Now, I want to come back and say the last thing we as Christians should ever be is genuinely uncivil in terms of being rude. Now, we have to take hard stands and sometimes say very hard things. We have to pay whatever price is necessary to be faithful to Christ and to the gospel. But the lack of civility is something we all need to bemoan and lament. However, a little reality would be helpful here. In terms of a rise of incivility, I think this is largely a media creation. I think since Genesis 3, people have tended towards being uncivil. And especially in terms of American politics, you go back to the way it was before. I mean, there were fistfights on the floor of Congress. There were epithets and things said. Daily newspapers called Abraham Lincoln a baboon, the ape from Illinois. Yet all this kind of language going on, that is not nice language. That should not be acceptable language. And I would be embarrassed to use that kind of language. And that's one of the limits upon incivility, is the fact that we do not want to bring judgment upon ourselves by what we would say. But nonetheless, there are a lot of reckless people out there doing reckless things at entertainment award shows and on tennis courts with professional sports and the rest. But you know what? It's the press that the media, who are really giving this so much attention, and they're asking about a rise of incivility, they're largely fueling it with their own coverage. Nonetheless, they asked the question, what does this mean? And it's interesting that the responses came back from several of the panelists, and one of them was Deepak Chopra. And this is what he writes. This is what he says. He says, the rise of incivility in this country is a symptom of mass psychopathology. Groups of people see other groups of people behaving badly, and this gives them permission to behave badly themselves. He goes on and he says this, the abuse delivered by right-wing Christians is such an old story that we are long past irony. The Reverend Rick Warren has a record for trying to smooth the waters, but he also flirts with intolerance toward gay marriage, for instance. And since his rationale is that a loving God shares the same prejudices, what's to stop others with worse tempers from following the same logic? When your God hates, you have permission to hate. Really interesting argument. Let's just think about that for a moment. We're going to take this on. We're going to consider exactly what Deepak Chopra is saying here, because it's not so important that he is saying it. This is kind of predictable coming from Deepak Chopra. It's the fact that there are people out there who see that argument, and in a postmodern culture, they go, that's exactly right. Because in a postmodern culture, this word intolerance is the scare word. You know, it's like the word discrimination. I was asked a question one time on, I think it was the first time I was on the O'Reilly Factor. I was asked the question, do you believe in discrimination? And the answer is, of course. And every sane person does. Now, what most people hear in that is, would you stand for the wrong kind of discrimination? Scandalous, immoral discrimination. The kind of discrimination that led to segregation, where people are discriminated against on the basis of their skin color or their ethnicity. Of course we should stand against that. We had better be those who say immediately that that is the very kind of discrimination that takes on the form of tangible sin that is antithetical to the gospel of Christ. But you know, it takes a discriminating mind to know what is sin and what is not. It actually takes a process of discrimination to know what is right and what is wrong. It takes discrimination to know that you do not hire a child molester to be your babysitter. That's discrimination. You bet it is. But any sane person knows that's the kind of discrimination that is absolutely necessary. You're making moral judgments about people all the time. People say, you know, that's judgmental. Well, there's a wrong way of making judgments, which is hypocritical, censorious, and from a position as if we do not sin. But there's a moral judgment that's necessary almost every moment of every waking day when we decide who is telling us the truth, whom can we trust, with whom will I do business, who will I marry, who will I entrust with my child. I mean, the issue of making moral judgments is an ongoing 24/7, well, at least so long as you're conscious, necessity. And the issue of tolerance comes down. You know, this morning in chapel, the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, I preached a message from one of the letters to the seven churches in the book of Revelation. And indeed, it's the letter to the church at Thyatira, Revelation chapter 2, verses 18 to 29. And when Jesus speaks to that church, he condemns them for tolerating the woman Jezebel and her false teachings. And so Jesus himself said, don't tolerate that. There is a wrong kind of intolerance, but there's also a wrong kind of tolerance. And that's what's really confusing Deepak Chopra's statement. It's just incidentally about Rick Warren, and Rick Warren became kind of the focus of a lot of this conversation right about the time of the inauguration of President Obama, when Rick Warren, pastor of the Saddleback Church there in California, very well-known figure, someone who has, I think by his own self-declared sense of purpose, tried to build bridges, partisan bridges, cultural bridges. He found himself the object of a good deal of opposition because he had, with his church, been clear about the fact that he did not believe that same-sex marriage was valid in the eyes of God. And he's speaking as a pastor to his people, the kind of conversation that a pastor is theologically and biblically obligated to have with his people. And because of that, there was a great deal of opposition as gay rights activists and others jumped on Rick Warren and said, you know, he is intolerant. And Deepak Chopra just piles on here. Ask about incivility. He produces one of the most, it's a statement that is lacking in incivility. In the name of tolerance, Deepak Chopra has offered here one of the most intolerant statements I think I've ever seen. But if he's right, maybe he's right to be without toleration of conservative Christians. But if he's wrong, we better watch this argument very carefully. He says that Rick Warren is flirting with intolerance towards gay marriage with his rationale that a loving God shares the same prejudices. Well, that makes me ask a question. I wonder if Deepak Chopra's God, his understanding of spirituality, I mean, is there any behavior we should hate? Is there any human behavior we should hate? This is the limitation of this whole ethic of tolerance. The fact is that those who preach this message of tolerance, well, they don't tolerate everything. They have to be intolerant concerning certain things. Seems to me the issue is, what set of issues, of acts, should we tolerate and which should we not? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. A good conversation to be had here. The phone number, 877-893-TALK. We'll be right back with your calls.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. One of the things we try to do on this program is watch developing arguments out there in the culture. In terms of our apologetics challenge, our challenge as Christians to think about how to communicate the gospel, talk about the gospel, speak to people about Christ, we have to know there are arguments that kind of get aligned out there in the culture. And to use a phrase from Richard Dawkins, there are memes. There are ideas that get planted out there that begin to take root and get shared. And one of them has to do with the confusion over a set of words such as discrimination, tolerance. It also gets back to the fact that there's a certain Jesus who is rather popular in postmodern culture. He's not the Jesus of the Bible. And just to make that point clear, when Deepak Chopra here criticizes right-wing Christians, he says the abuse delivered by right-wing Christians is such an old story that we are long past irony. He goes at Rick Warren. He says has a record for trying to smooth the waters, but he also flirts with intolerance towards gay marriage, for instance. Again, the rootage of that has to do with the fact that Rick Warren, his pastor there at Saddleback, did speak to his people about what he believes the Bible says about marriage and the fact that same-sex marriage is not marriage. And that became enough. A pastor speaking to his people about marriage became enough for many to accuse him of intolerance when he, in a very public role, was asked to give the invocation at the inauguration of President Barack Obama. But the particular issue of our interest here is that Deepak Chopra, who wrote this article at On Faith for the Washington Post Newsweek magazine, says that these conservative Christians who take positions like this toward gay marriage follow a rationale that a loving God shares the same prejudices. Now, here again, a very interesting argument. Deepak Chopra obviously believes that God has no prejudices. Now, that sounds so good at face value. That's why a postmodern culture and this kind of new age spirituality can sound so good. It can sound so attractive at first glance. Because I think most of us, just in terms of our fallenness and our own confusion and our self-centeredness, if we were to follow an idol of our own devising and define God according to our own terms, we like a God who has no prejudices. The problem is, that doesn't look too good in the long run. Do we want a God, really? And if we're making up an idol and imagining what God we might want, we might project, we might construct, we might make in our own image, do we really want a God that can't tell a difference between, say, a brain surgeon and a mass murderer? Okay, well, that's a form of prejudice. That's the right form of prejudice, by the way. In other words, any sane person believes that some things are wrong. I believe, as we're talking right now, even Deepak Chopra, the New Age guru who attacks conservative Christians for holding that homosexuality is sinful, I believe that he thinks certain things are wrong. So on those issues, he is intolerant. By determining that those things are morally wrong, and I believe with all my heart he believes that some things are wrong. As a matter of fact, he says in this article he thinks that incivility is wrong. Well, that means he doesn't think we should tolerate, in terms of at least failing to render moral judgment, on those who are lacking in civility. You know, the reality is everybody's got a list of what we believe is right and wrong. And what Deepak Chopra really goes at conservative Christians about is he accuses us of just saying that God approves of our list. And you know what? If we're worshiping a God who is nothing more than a projection of our own imagination, if there is not the existent self-revealing God, if there is not indeed one God who has spoken in his word, and if we do not have in the Bible a clear and trustworthy word from God, then we are just baptizing our intolerance. But on the other hand, if there is a God and he has spoken, and if the Bible is his revelation of himself to us in written form, then we'll discover in any honest reading of that text that the God who is love, the God who is judge, is a God who's quite judgmental about behavior. A God who says, do this and do not do that. And, you know, Deepak Chopra suggests that Jesus, for instance, tried to create a new way of non-judgmentalism. I wonder what he'd do with the text I preached this morning in chapel. Revelation chapter 2, verses 18 to 29, letter to the church at Thyatira. Jesus speaks of those who are following Jezebel, and he says, I will throw her on a sickbed that leads to death, and I will slay her children with pestilence. You know, that's pretty judgmental. That's not the Jesus Deepak Chopra is talking about. That is the Jesus of the Bible. There's far more to be said there. When we come back, we're going to try to clarify the confusion that Deepak Chopra offers. And we'll be right back with your calls.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. When you're talking about this whole phenomenon of New Age spirituality, there's a certain pattern, paradigm out there that you ought to watch for. And this is it. They will generally say wonderfully nice and complimentary things about Jesus. And some of them will even write books about Jesus. But it's not just what they put in that's important, it's what they leave out and how they construe who Jesus is. New Age spirituality offers this kind of amalgam, a mix, a confusion of doctrines and teachings, a little bit from here, a little bit from there, a little bit from the East, a little bit from the West, a little bit from the North, a little bit from the South, a little bit from Christianity, a little bit from Judaism, generally the more mystical aspects of Christianity and Judaism with the Kabbalah, that's very all Quran these days in New Age circles, a little bit from Islam, probably the Sufi tradition, a little bit from Buddhism, a little bit from, well, any of the various teachings of Hinduism, et cetera, et cetera. Taoism, you can go all around the world. And these New Age gurus are out there. Interesting story in the New York Times Sunday about women who are becoming New Age coaches to younger women, charging about $100 an hour for private coaching sessions. We're going to bring that in for some interesting conversation later on. But nonetheless, you have an interest in Jesus, but it's not the Jesus of the Bible. Now, for instance, Deepak Chopra really becomes kind of the poster child for this himself. Just last year, in the 2008 year, he published a book entitled The Third Jesus, The Christ We Cannot Ignore. And by the way, became a New York Times bestseller. He got a lot of attention. He begins by saying Jesus Christ left a riddle that 2,000 years of worship haven't solved. The riddle can be stated in one sentence. Why are Jesus' teachings impossible to live by? You know, very, very interesting. What teachings of Jesus? Which teachings of Jesus? Because I guarantee you, the New Age kind of spirituality, a spirituality that avoids hard truth issues because it avoids truth, or makes it just an abstraction or an emotional issue, and avoids moral judgment, or does its very best to avoid moral judgment, it's going to have a hard time actually dealing with the real Jesus that is encountered in the New Testament. By the way, just in case you wonder how straightforward Deepak Chopra is going to be about his kind of own revision of Jesus, consider this, bottom of page 2 of the book. Jesus failed to bring about God's rule on earth, and his radical vision became compromised only a generation after his death, at the same time that early Christianity was spreading with startling speed and intensity. The disciples who had followed him knew without a doubt that they had met somebody, someone of earth-shaking significance. What the disciples didn't talk about so fervently was the shadow side of their new faith. They were struggling to live as Jesus wanted them to, and in many respects they were failing. They fought for power amongst themselves and squabbled over doctrine. They had doubts and fears of persecution. Jealousy and sexual desire made their age-old claims. Such basic matters as whether to follow Peter or Paul as chief spokesman for Jesus drove Christians apart. He continues, as a result, Christianity was forced to compromise Jesus' vision. Very, very interesting. He says that Jesus wanted to inspire a world reborn in God. He says Jesus failed in his mission. He wanted to bring about God's rule on earth, but he failed. And just in case you're wondering if this is a supernatural Jesus, well, Deepak Chopra pretty much eliminates that category. This is what he says at the bottom of page 3. He says Jesus did not physically descend from God's dwelling place above the clouds, nor did he return to sit at the right hand of a literal throne. So why was Jesus divine, we might ask Deepak Chopra? He answers that in his own way. What made Jesus the Son of God was the fact that he had achieved God consciousness. So Jesus was New Age before New Age was cool. Now, again, the problem with this that we could understand is that this is not the Jesus of the Bible. Now, you may remember Johnny Cash had a song about your own personal Jesus. And here's the danger. If you are not disciplined to go to the Scripture and the Scripture alone to find out who Jesus is, what Jesus said, why Jesus came, what Jesus accomplished, how Jesus promises, what Jesus will do when he returns. If you do not go to the Bible and the Bible alone, then you're developing your own personal Jesus. Deepak Chopra has his own personal Jesus. Not a divine Jesus, not a Jesus who came down from heaven, not a Jesus who went back to be with the Father to judge. Evidently, as you read this book, not a Jesus who accomplished his mission, but rather a Jesus who failed in his mission. But nonetheless, a Jesus who left us teachings that are capable of inspiring. Deepak Chopra writes, in this book, I argue that Jesus's vision isn't impossible to realize. Yes, it is radical and mystical. None of that has changed. But the underlying dilemma, how to live as Jesus wanted us to, can be resolved. Now, you're going to have to get over the Jesus of the Bible, however, to follow Deepak Chopra's advice. As you get to the end of the book, by the way, and you read all the way through, you'll discover that Deepak Chopra has chapters in this book on Jesus on issues such as abortion. You also have Jesus on gay rights. He says Jesus himself is silent on this issue. He says we don't need anyone's guess that Jesus might or might not have condemned homosexuality. You're right, we don't need anyone's guess, because Jesus was very clear that he did not come to reverse any aspect of the law. He came to fulfill it. It was Jesus himself who said from the beginning, God made us to be male and female, husband of one wife for a lifetime, the wife of one husband. That's the way that God intended it from the beginning. You're right, we don't need to guess. The Bible is sufficient to render a very clear verdict on this issue that is indeed unavoidable. So, you have an issue like gay rights, and Deepak Chopra says that conservative Christians are judgmental on the issue of gay rights. And, you know, there's a sense in which he's absolutely right, because a moral judgment has to be made. And, by the way, people who support gay rights are also judgmental. They're making a judgment that there's nothing wrong with homosexuality. That, too, is a moral judgment. You're making a moral judgment right now. How do you respond to this argument? And how do you respond to the moral question about whether it's abortion or stem cell research or robbing banks or homosexuality or anger or lust or gluttony? We're making moral judgments all the time. You know, it's good for us to look at this kind of argument because, as I said earlier in the program, this is the kind of argument that's getting traction in a postmodern world where you have conviction reduced to spirituality. The New Age spirituality has come along, and Deepak Chopra is kind of, an excellent popular model for understanding this, and says you can have Jesus. Doesn't need to be the supernatural Jesus. Doesn't need to be the Jesus in the New Testament. You take the parts of Jesus you like, interpret it as you wish, and there's your Jesus. It's just not, we have to be clear, the Jesus who saves sinners. Back of final thoughts. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Out there in the culture, we face an enormous apologetic challenge as Christians. And it really is, if you take the full measure of it, a pretty daunting challenge. Let me tell you, the contours of this challenge, the dimensions of it, they really become into clearer sight when you understand that words themselves no longer have the kind of stable meaning they once had. And so when you use a word like truth, you know, these days we have to be very clear. We're not just talking about a compliment we're paying to an idea. You know, that's a nice idea. We'll call it true. When we as Christians talk about truth, we're talking about that which is objectively true. It corresponds to reality. And on the most important issues of life, we got to come back and say, that's revealed truth. We didn't come up with this. We didn't discover this truth in a laboratory. We didn't send someone out as an astronaut into outer space to get this truth. This is a truth that God gave us. In Romans chapter 10, Paul goes back to Moses from the last part of Deuteronomy to ask, the word, is it not near you? And of course it is. You didn't go up to heaven to get it. You didn't go down to Hades to get it. God gave it to you. He brought it near to you. You know, the issue of truth is just such a volatile issue. And truth, by the way, is not a very tolerant category. Because if truth has any meaning, that means there's also the untruth. There is truth and there is error. There is right and there is wrong. There's that which corresponds to reality and there's that which doesn't correspond to reality. You go into a court of law, you're trying to determine what is true. You're not just negotiating which idea you like better, guilty or innocent. You're not just going in trying to decide, you like this particular story better than that story. You're going in to say, we really need to find out what took place. But if you notice, when it comes to the most important issues of life, people want to change the rules when it comes to truth. And they want to shift from talking about what is true sometimes to talking about what is meaningful. And I find it increasingly common that when I talk to people about God, when I talk to them about the gospel, when I talk to them about Christ, they speak to me with this kind of language. You see, if you're not hearing this, well, I believe in the kind of God who. But let me tell you, when you start out with that formulation, you're already putting the first person pronoun in front of your definition of God. The God is who you, that you want to believe in, is the God in whom you want to believe. That's all you're saying. And that's why, well, for a lot of people, theology is really just psychology. That's the issue in which I agree with Deepak Chopra. I'll come at the end to agree with him on that point. This confusion is a form of mass psychology. And that's where we would be stuck, ladies and gentlemen, but for one thing, and that is that there is a God who did speak to us. And he spoke to us in his word, and because he did speak, we're obligated to hear. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.